Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to another edition of my podcast, Lead Singer Syndrome. I'm Shane Told. And what I do on this podcast is I chat with other lead singers about what it's like to be the front man or front woman, in this case, of a band. This is a super, super exciting episode. A singer that I've wanted to have on the show since I first heard of their band a couple of years ago now, I guess it's been. They're called Dying Wish. Her name is Emma. This is just one of the most exciting bands in heavy music right now. And some exciting news. We have a new album coming from them before the end of the year. That's as much information as I could get from her, but that's kind of breaking news. I don't know if they've announced that yet, but we also have a new song coming in just a couple weeks as well. So lots of news about Dying Wish. And if you somehow have been sleeping on this band, now is a great time to check out their debut album, which is about a year and a half old. This thing absolutely rocks. Because of this record, they got tours with everyone from Code Orange to The Devil Wears Prada to Counterparts to Limp Bizkit. So they've been touring their asses off, and it's great to see the success. So this is a really, really great conversation. Thank you so much for tuning in. We're going to get to my talk with Emma in just a minute. But before that, I want to thank you all so much for listening to this. And we're back, baby. We're back. We're a couple episodes in now to what I like to call Lead Singer Syndrome 2.0. I know I'm not doing things exceptionally different than I was before, but I took a bit of a hiatus. I needed a little bit of a break. Some things went a little crazy, but I am back and feeling really, really good about the conversations that I'm having. And we have some very, very exciting guests coming up. Shout out to my new producer, Kevin. He's making the magic happen. And shout out to my editor, Josh, for making this sound just so good. Oh yeah. Sounds good, doesn't it? That was weird and creepy. Maybe we'll cut that out. Josh, what do you think? I don't know. Nope, he's going to leave it in. But you can always get in touch with me. You can email me, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. I would love to hear suggestions for upcoming guests or any life advice you might have for me. That would be great as well. And yeah, real easy. Just hit me up with an email. I read them all. I try to get back to people, but I had 4.2 billion unread emails at one point. I'm not lying. It's on my Twitter, @ShaneTold, if you want to check. So I'm a little bit slow to respond once in a while. Regardless, hit me up. And also, if you want to support this thing, obviously, there's bills we got to pay and things we have to, you know, do to keep the lights on around here. So check out the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. That's the best way you can support. Head over to leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. And for as little as $6 a month, that gets you in, gets you lots of perks as well. And all I ask is you check it out, leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. Also, I am about to embark on a tour with my band, Silverstein. We're playing some, what they call in the biz, B markets, some smaller cities, and we might be, you know, scurrying into a town near you with our friends in Dayseeker, CU Space Cowboy, and One Step Closer. So make sure that you come get some tickets. SilversteinMusic.com for all your tickets and VIP needs. And if you happen to run into me, make sure you say hi. It's really nice to hear when people say, oh, Shane, I love what you're doing with the podcast. That episode with Emma from Dying Wish was so cool. And I really appreciate that. And I love to hear from you as well. So hope to see you there. We'll be coming around. And it is very, very exciting times. If you like this show, make sure you hit that subscribe button. Okay? There's algorithms and there's weird stuff now that needs to happen. So the more people that are actually like, I know you're listening to this, whether you're on your phone or a computer or whatever you're listening to this on, there's a button that says subscribe or follow or something. Just please do that right now. I'll wait. Did you do it? Okay, you did it. Thank you. Thank you so much for doing that. That does mean a lot to me. That is very, very important. So thanks for doing that. And if you want to go a step further, and you want to go on iTunes and you want to give this thing a 5-star review, that also helps a lot too. So just trying to grow, just trying to expose new awesome bands like Dying Wish to the masses. And it's an exciting time for the podcast and an exciting time for heavy music. I think post-pandemic, if I can say that, it is awesome right now, everything coming out. So let's get into it and my conversation with Emma of Dying Wish.
Hello.
Hi, Emma.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, I'm well.
Awesome. That's awesome. Thanks for doing this.
Of course, I'm excited. Can you hear me okay? Because sometimes I use my Beats, but I think this audio is honestly just better.
Yeah. No, you sound great. Terrific.
Okay.
Yeah, I find every time somebody uses like AirPods or something, I hear everything except them. Like if there's a bird chirping in the background, it's like the loudest thing on earth. And I don't know what's up with that.
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted to warn you too. I'm in the studio and it's a cabin, so the walls are fairly thin. So there might be some background noise. But
look, this is free content for people, okay? If they complain about a little, you know, imperfection on the audio side, they can... I'll tell them where to go. No, I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah.
No, I do appreciate them listening. But yeah, you know, we do our best over here and it doesn't have to be perfect. I'm sure they can hear you. I can hear you. You can hear me. And we're going to have a nice conversation.
Yeah. What more can you ask for?
That's right. So you're in the studio. Is this like spoiler alert? Can we talk about whatever's going on?
We can talk about it. I mean, we've been kind of... You know, we're not dropping a ton of hints online, but we've talked about how we're here and, you know, posting our, you know, progress sheet of all of the stuff that we're doing. But we're working on our second record right now and it's so far going super well and I'm really stoked on it.
That's, yeah, it's very exciting. Obviously, like, I know you're a bit of a student of the game, if we can say that. I know you know a lot about, like, the history of hardcore and metal and all that stuff. And, you know, I'm sure you're well aware that the second record a band puts out, the sophomore album, tends to be very important to a band's career.
Oh yeah, big time. That's been, you know, a couple months leading up to getting here, you know, I kind of struggled with the pressure of that a lot. And, you know, the whole concept of like a sophomore slump, like really weighed on me. But now that we're here and, you know, actually like putting our feet to the ground and doing it, I don't feel that as much, but especially just like having the support of everyone in my band. But I was definitely going through it like by myself for a minute, thinking about how terribly it could go.
Well, I don't think you're capable of I mean, after the first album, which is what, about a year and a half old now, Fragments of a Bitter Memory, which turned so many heads, as an amazing debut album. Congratulations on that, by the way. I haven't said that to your face. I mean, I don't think you're capable of like really fucking it up unless you, you know, I don't know, completely change your style and really alienate your fan base.
Right.
But I mean, there's obviously so much talent coming through, you know, not just yourself, but your entire band. And I'm sure that's not going to happen, but the pressure is obviously a thing. And, you know, I guess like going into it, talking with you and the other people in the band, like what you guys, you know, what you kind of all came to, did you have a conversation about, okay, this is what we're going to try to do, or did you not? And is that where some of the pressure stems from?
Oh, definitely. The preparation on this record compared to the first one is like night and day. Like first record, you know, we kind of just got to the studio and just did it. And I think we were tracking drums up to the day that we were supposed to leave. And so, you know, it wasn't, we knew what we were doing. And I think that the sound on the record is really intentional. But now, you know, we've just like established who we are as musicians and as a band in such a different level that we've definitely like prepared, you know, concepts and themes and, you know, right. All of the things that we did on the record that, you know, we want to do, and all of the things that we didn't want it, that we didn't do that, you know, we want to show off a little bit. And so it's definitely not going to, you know, surprise a ton of people as far as like, we're not, you know, changing our sound necessarily, but we are going to be challenging ourselves and doing a lot of things differently, which I think is exciting.
Absolutely. I thought, you know, one thing that was really interesting about your band. Now I'm trying to remember back to when your album came out. I think I'd heard some singles before that, but I remember there was one song that you did a lot of clean singing on, and I think it was called Until Morning Comes. I think that might have been the one. Mm-hmm. Or Drowning the Silent Black. They both have, they're kind of the two songs that have like a little bit of clean singing. And I remember hearing the record and kind of being like, I kind of wish there was more of that. And obviously, you know, you're known for your visceral, like intense vocal style, and your band is in your face as it gets. But some of those moments were really nice on that album. Is this something that you're maybe as a singer going to try to expand on? Is doing some more clean vocals? Is that something we can expect from this record? Or is that something you don't want to do again? Like, where's your take on that? Because I know that the idea of clean vocals can be kind of polarizing in hardcore. So I'm kind of wondering where you're at with that.
Yeah, well, it should be like right around the time of this episode or like right after we're dropping a single. And that is pretty clean heavy. We've been playing it live since we were on tour with Counterparts.
Is this Torn from Your Silhouette?
Yeah, I don't know if you got a chance to listen to it.
Oh, but maybe a little birdie sent it my way. Yes, maybe, yeah. I did. You know, I do my homework around here.
Yeah, so I think that is a pretty good foundation to lay for as far as like what this next, you know, level of Dying Wish kind of looks like. But, you know, we've talked about it, and we definitely, there's a lot of moments on the new record. We're still demoing out a lot of the vocals. There's a lot of moments and songs that are super clean dependent. And then there's a lot that aren't. And I like that dichotomy that we have of, you know, being a super heavy band and like, you know, having awesome breakdowns and really like big moments for the pit, and then also, you know, having those kind of sing-along moments. And I think that as long as it's done right, that's something that we want to do. But, you know, we just want to continue to do whatever is organic. However, I love to sing, and I was a singer first and a screamer second. So, of course, I kind of want to flex that muscle a little bit on the record if it makes sense.
Totally, totally. Although, like, at least, you know, when you're on like day 38 of a tour and your voice is like messed up, at least like with screaming, you can like, you don't have to worry about it at least hitting the high notes.
You know what I mean? That's the one thing I'd advise about it. It's like, just stick with the screaming. Then you don't have to worry about like at least hitting the notes. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I definitely, there was a few, because we just went so hard at the end of last year.
Oh yeah.
We play Until Morning Comes, and that song is super, super high. And it's, you know, it's kind of like in my head voice a little bit, but there are some parts where I was like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to be able to hit that note today, but you know, kind of miraculously, it always happens.
Isn't it weird? Yeah. Like I swear there's times, and I'm sure you can relate to this. It's like, there's times when I wake up, I like feel like total shit. I like can barely talk. Like I'm so raspy. And then I don't know what it is. Like the second I get on stage, there's like a switch. I don't know if it's like adrenaline or what it is. And I'm just like, fine. Like maybe I'm not awesome, but I'm fine.
Right.
And it's like, where does that come from?
It's like the anxiety all day of like, oh, my voice sounds terrible. Like I'm not going to be able to do it. And then you get up there and it's like, you know, you worried all day for nothing. I feel like Jeremy and I talk about that a lot, but yeah, it's.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's stressful.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Jeremy from The Devil Wears Prada, your boyfriend, who is a good friend of mine and one of my favorite people, also a singer in a band. So yeah, that's, I guess like, having a relationship with someone in a band like that, in like a professional band, it must be like interesting when you're like, I don't know, you have a day at the end of the day, you call and you're like, yeah, like I just, my in-ears just like weren't working today. Like I had bad RF or like, you know, just like whatever weird things you could say to each other that you would understand, which like maybe typically a partner wouldn't. That must be kind of nice in some ways.
It's really nice because, you know, I worked in the industry before, you know, being in a band full time too. And he's such like a business brain guy. And so him and I kind of like share that in a lot of ways as well. But it's really nice to be able to just like click with somebody on every level. It's kind of, I'm definitely not used to it.
Amazing. Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, he's one of my favorites too.
He's the best.
He's a good time. You mentioned, okay, you worked in the music industry. I actually did not know that. What did you do in the industry before you started on this current journey?
Well, it started with me just like booking shows, hardcore shows locally at a venue, and then, or like bars, you know, just Legion Halls, doing all of that. And then I got into working at a venue called the Hawthorne Theater there.
Oh, yeah. I know it well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I did box office, stagehand, worked my way up to production manager and assistant buyer there. And then pandemic hit and I lost my job for obvious reasons. But I still do quite a bit of booking in Portland, you know, at this venue called Mano Occulta. It's a 150 cap room. I do mostly just like hardcore metal shows there. But I've kind of done a little bit of everything. I've sold merch. I tried LD a few times. I don't understand it, but yeah, I've put my hand in a lot of different pots.
Nice. Nice. That's awesome. Yes. No, the Hawthorne always... I mean, I've had some amazing moments in that place, but it's just chaos. Like every time we play there, it's just someone goes to the hospital or something like that. Like there's no barricade. People are just crowd surfing the whole show. Like it's mayhem in that place, like every single time. And that's interesting for Portland because Portland like has a bit of a reputation maybe as like a more of a chilled out like Pacific Northwest place. But I don't know what it is about the Hawthorne that brings it out of them.
I don't know. There's something in the walls there. It definitely has a reputation.
Damn. Yeah. Damn right it does. And the reputation for not being able to fucking park. And you have to park like around the corner behind a Chinese restaurant or something.
Oh, yeah. I have a hack for that, but I'm not. Oh. I think too many people have caught on, so I can't share it on the podcast. But
okay, yeah. No. I'm gonna text you about that one if we're back there anytime soon. So going back even further, I know we're talking about Portland, Oregon for people who don't know where the Hawthorne Theater is, and I know that that's where home base is for you now, but I understand that kind of early in your life you moved around a lot, and then I think it was Bend, Oregon that you lived in for a while. But then you came to Portland and that's kind of when you found music. So talk to me a little bit about like your family structure growing up and kind of how you found yourself in so immersed in, you know, punk rock, hardcore.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I kind of lived all over. I was born in Bend.
Okay.
Lived there with my mom, who had me really young. And then when I was 5, we moved to Southern Oregon. She got married and went to Southern Oregon University. So I lived in small towns pretty much up until I moved to Portland proper when I was in my early 20s, because even when I like went to high school, I was living in like a suburb of Portland that was kind of a small town. But I was living in Southern Oregon, and, you know, my mom being in the, from the Northwest, you know, super into like Nirvana, Soundgarden, Pearl Jam,
right,
like the grunge era, the Cranberries, and more so into like No Doubt, Fugazi, stuff like that, just like kind of a mixed bag. So she showed me, you know, tons of different music when I was a kid. And that was always a way that we had bonded, because my mom loves music, just, you know, and kind of planted that in, you know, my life. But it wasn't until I found MySpace, which I think is really interesting, because I think that we're kind of seeing this whole new MySpace era recreated through TikTok right now. And it's really interesting to see how like all of this, these new people and these kids are getting into music they would have never discovered without a platform like TikTok. But I feel like that was MySpace for me and like for so many other kids in the scene. You know, 13 years old, living in a small town, finding bands like Bring Me the Horizon, Suicide Silence, so on and so forth. Devil Wears Prada, even like stuff like that. And then we moved to Portland when I was 14, and I went to my first Warped Tour, and then I started going to shows at the Hawthorne Theater, and it just like kind of took over from there, meeting people in the scene, and then going to like more smaller hardcore shows. And then kind of by the time I was like 16, 17 years old, was like really immersed into that culture. It just kind of all happened really organically as I moved into town and started going to shows.
That's awesome. No, I love that. It's really interesting. And I don't think I've, I don't know, to be honest, I think I have the TikTok app on my phone, but I've like maybe opened it 4 times.
Yeah.
And so I don't, you know, I watch all my TikTok videos on Instagram, like a real adult, you know, yeah. but <Same. laughs> you know, I don't really get it. And I hate to sound like a dinosaur, but I am 42 years old, so it is what it is. But you know, mm-hmm. I really think that's interesting how something like MySpace, which the older generation at the time didn't really understand, and now TikTok is like basically doing the same thing. But I want to press you a little further, because I'm trying to really understand how exactly this works. Like, because TikTok, it's basically like people are making videos around music. So how does that work with like hardcore? Is this like people are showing like hardcore dancing, or is this like, or you just mean that this is kind of opening the gateway of, let's just call it like heavy rock to, you know, to the masses?
I think that people are going to shows and posting videos on TikTok, and kids, you know, that have never experienced anything like, you know, a hardcore show ever are really appealed to that right now, because I think that the youth is so like starved for angst right now.
Yeah.
There's every reason to be angry, I'm sure, for them especially. And like, I think, well, a great example is we had played, I think we were on tour with Motionless and White, and then we had some off day shows, and then did a last minute gig at this venue called Midnight Hour in the Valley in Southern California. And a bunch of people showed up. It was a great show. Somebody had posted a video of us playing, and it kind of went viral. And that is how Fred Durst found us, I think.
Crazy.
And ended up touring with Limp Bizkit after that. So, you know.
Yeah.
I just think that people are experiencing this unique, you know, experience, I guess. They're discovering this unique scene that is hardcore. And I think it's just kind of, it's working really well for certain bands like Tsunami, Scowl, Us Even. Mm-hmm. And it's really cool to see. I think that it's becoming more mainstream than ever. And, you know, it kind of also makes, it easier to market yourself if you know what you're doing through the app. Not like I do, but
yeah, no, definitely. Well, if Fred's on there, I mean, he's older than me, so I gotta pull up my socks. Yeah, no, I think you're right about the genre, like, just let's just call it like extreme music, whether it's extreme metal or whatever. I mean, we've all seen what Lorna Shore has done, you know, over the past year and a half or whatever, and that's like opening all kinds of doors for like the whole deathcore scene. Now, I know you guys aren't exactly right there. You know, you're more in the hardcore scene, but it's true. You know, like a lot of times this stuff bleeds together, especially for, you know, people that are just kind of getting in touch with it and being like, well, I've never heard anything like this. And I didn't know girls could scream, you know, like, and these are definitely things that happen and are kind of paving the way for everything. So, speaking of girls that can scream, how did you get into that side of it? You said you were a clean singer first. Were you in some bands? Did you put out anything? Is there anything like I can funny that find that's funny on the internet?
Oh no.
Is there? Cause I'll find it.
I wish. so I have a friend who I run into her all the time in Portland. She dated this guy when I was like 15 years old. I started this band and I couldn't remember what it was called, but she reminded me we were called Conflict. And that's, we wrote one song and we had like three band practices, and she was the only person that ever came to the band practice because she was dating the drummer of the band. And I have no idea where any of these people that were in the band, like what they're up to, but you know, she reminds me of this all the time. And we were very much like, I was trying to be the next Hayley Williams. Like that was, you know, we were trying to do like a Paramore vibe, but I had not even ever thought about screaming at that point. I was just really active in choir. I was one of those kids in school, but I was always going to hardcore shows in high school and, you know, and on. So I don't think it was really... I was actually thinking about this the other day. I'd always wanted to start a band, but I don't think it was until the last Rainfest in Seattle. I saw a band called Mortality Rate. And I was like, you know, she's only a couple years older than me. And I was like, wow, this is something that I could do. And so I just kind of started a band with two people who play in Dying Wish. Pedro and Jeff, we've known each other since middle school. And I don't know. I kind of just like, I think it just took me seeing one person who was like me, like Jess, you know, my age, smaller person, but still like ferocious energy. Like, I think it just took that for me to like realize like, oh, like I can too. And I think from that moment on, I just kind of always taken this huge ownership over the scene and like my place in it.
I love that. Yeah, no, I mean, what were some of the other bands that were influential to you? Were there any female fronted bands? Because I think the first time I heard you, I thought immediately of Undying. And I don't know if it's because Dying Wish, Undying.
Right.
But that band for sure, like, you know, very metal, a very petite front woman, like later on in the band. Mm-hmm. But I absolutely love Undying, like one of my favorite bands ever. Was that something you ever got compared to, or was that an influence at all?
Undying, I'm sure we've gotten that comparison quite a lot. We've gotten Walls of Jericho tons, which Candace has always been, you know, ever since we really started Dying Wish. I mean, they're like a classic metalcore band, so that just like made sense. But I mean, yeah. And honestly, like even not like hardcore punk figures, like I always thought Gwen Stefani was such an icon, and, you know, like Madonna and, just like more of like those pop stars, which I see like, you know, a lot of iconic figures like in hardcore bands these days, like Cat from Scowl and stuff. And I always thought that was more of my vibe. But honestly, like my biggest inspiration would be probably Howard from Killswitch. I just think like, especially up to recording this record, I listened to End of Heartache every day for like a month and a half. It's like, he's just like the best vocalist of all time, I think.
I definitely can agree with that. He is.
Yeah.
He's unbelievable. Absolutely. Wow. Cool. Okay. No, I love all that. Yeah. Walls of Jericho. Totally. I think for me growing up, cause you know, Walls of Jericho has been around forever. Like they've been around since I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that was probably the first hardcore band that I ever heard with a female singer, especially because, you know, I grew up in Canada and they're from Detroit. So it's, you know, it's only like a 4-hour drive. So I used to see Walls of Jericho play, you know, all the time. And it's funny.
Yeah.
You bring them up because I remember the Walls of Jericho record. The first one, I can't remember what it was called. Fuck. It's at least like, it's probably 25 years old, but that record has a very similar vibe to your record where it's like a hardcore, masterpiece. That has one very soft song with Candace singing that's like very beautiful. So I can totally see why people would make that comparison. But also, you know, you guys got the riffs, man. You got the riffs.
Right.
Like that Swedish, like at the gate style you know, sound as well, which is really cool to incorporate.
Yeah, I think the Walls of Jericho comparison is my favorite one out of all ones with, you know, women singing, because I think a lot of the other comparisons don't necessarily make a lot of sense. Like people have said like Bloodline Calligraphy, and I'm like, I don't really personally like, or just, you know, I've had people say like, oh, it's like Punch, but you know, hardcore. And I'm like, that's insane. But, you know, I think people want to make the comparison just because it's women. But like, you know, I think that comparisons with bands that don't have women in them often make more sense. Like you said, like At the Gates and like Killswitch and stuff like that.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Couple things I want to ask you. You mentioned how hard you hit the road last year. It was, yeah, intense. Like I looked at your schedule and it was crazy. But what kind of stuck out the most to me was that you toured with bands like Code Orange, Hatebreed, you mentioned Devil Wears Prada, and you mentioned Limp Bizkit. So what was that like, just kind of being a newer band on your first album cycle and running into obviously some characters there. Jamie Jasta, Jamie from Code Orange, both Jamies, both definitely characters. Did you meet Fred Durst? What's he like?
And
what kind of advice did you get from all these people, if any, or was it just kind of like taking it all in?
I mean, I guess my favorite piece of advice that we got from Fred Durst was that there's no line, which he meant in the frame of comedy, but I like also took it as like, you know, like, damn, we really did a tour with Code Orange and with Limp Bizkit and Prada and Hatebreed. Like there's no line. Like we can, you know, basically just do it all. And there was a lot of lessons learned. I feel like I didn't necessarily hang out with Josta so much. You know, he's like a busy guy, and I'm sure he manages Hatebreed and like does a million other things. And so, but you know, Fred was around quite a bit, and I think that like one thing I picked up on with like Fred was that he's just like a really, really chill guy. And it made me kind of realize that, you know, like, because at first, you know, we're touring all the time, we're going to all these different places, I want to, you know, hang out with all these different people. And it was kind of that tour when I realized like, oh, you know, it's probably best to like spare your energy a little bit and like chill. You know, but, I would say one of my biggest teachers from all of touring last year would probably be Jeremy, and, you know, just like his outlook on life and like how to like create your own happiness and, you know, manifest and, you know, the ups and downs that they've had as a band, to where they are now, like, was really inspiring. And, and, you know, Limp Bizkit too, you know, they had that documentary come out last year of Woodstock, and like, you know, that it's like, it's a bumpy ride, but it's all worth it in the end, you know?
I couldn't fucking believe that documentary. I watched it kind of recently, like maybe about a month ago.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. Like when they start handing out the candles. Just incredible.
There was so much to unpack. I was like, from all angles.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, yeah. Definitely. I mean, there's some like, yeah, there's some pretty fucked up, horrible shit too, in that documentary, but just the mismanagement of a music festival. Oh my God. Crazy, crazy stuff. Yeah. People need to watch that if they have not seen that yet. It's on Netflix. So I want to get into, some of your message and, you know, kind of like what you're trying to do and what you're trying to be as a band. Cause I think that that's the most important thing about Dying Wish. And I want to read what your Spotify says so that people can understand what it is. I'm just going to read it real quick. Dying Wish align themselves with the continuing battle for liberation, encompassing the issues affecting BIPOC, the environment, policing, and more intersectional causes while dealing in personal tribulation and trauma in equal measure. They make music aimed at unity, but without compromise. Abolition, revolution, and liberation in spirit and song is the heart of Dying Wish. Wow. Did you write that?
No, but I read it the other day and I was like, wow, this goes hard.
Yeah, it does go hard. And that's why I'm bringing it up. It is. It's all, especially it's all in caps too. So it seems, comes off very serious and very intense. But I mean, obviously this is something you're very passionate about.
Right. I want this message to get across in a way that is palatable, you know? So even if someone doesn't necessarily agree with everything that you just said there, they can understand it. Because I think that we're at a point in humanity where lack of understanding is our greatest downfall. And we're not all going to feel the same and think the same and, you know, act the same all the time. But I think that, you know, a level of understanding is important, and a level of empathy for others as well. And so, I mean, on Fragments, you hear a lot of, you know, we talk about policing and we talk about colonization, and we talk about mental health, and we talk about, you know, trauma and so on and so forth. And then also violence. Like, it's just kind of all of this big picture, I guess, is like what we're trying to get to.
Yeah.
And, you know, as far as topics go for the new record, it's not going to stray very far off, but there are new things that we're going to talk about, new perspectives too, because, you know, constantly growing, I think, is important. And sharing that is, you know, kind of what I feel is important to me as well. So,
well, it's really interesting, right? Like, as your band grows in terms of popularity, you know, and you drop your record, Fragments of a Bitter Memory, a lot of eyeballs are on you, and a lot of your, I'm sure a lot of fans that are relating to your songs are coming up to you and talking about how important they are to them, whether they're from a marginalized group or whether they're someone that's gone through similar things that you've gone through trauma wise or whatever. When you go into writing this new album, do you think about that? Is that something that makes it a little more real than it did when you were putting together your first album and had obviously a much smaller fan base?
Honestly, I haven't really thought about that at all. And
sorry to bring that up.
No, it's okay. It is important to me, you know, when people come up to me and like, you know, they're like, oh, you know, morning, like for example, Until Morning Comes is written about a family friend who tragically passed away. And on the anniversary of his death, someone had come up to me and said, that song is really important. My father passed away, blah, blah, blah. And so, you know, stuff like that, like, is super impactful. But I have kind of tried not to let, especially because I read a lot of negativity online, I've tried not to let, you know, other people kind of dictate what I do or like what I write about. Because I think that, like, you know, this, like, for me, it sounds kind of selfish, but like for me and for us, like, this record is just kind of about speaking our truth. And like, if people can relate to it, that's great. But even if they can't, I think they're still going to like what we've written. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well put, well put.
Thank you.
That's awesome. Well, so you guys are in the studio right now, and I guess you have, you know, a song you've basically, like, it seems like it's going to come out, and the record is mostly done, and you're playing a festival this weekend. Is that right? Up in Louisville. I think that's how they like to say it.
Louisville.
That's how they say it. I'm not making this up. It's like Louisville.
I know, yeah.
It's bizarre.
If you say Louisville, they'll kick you out.
Yeah.
You're not on the tour anymore.
It's not even like they just kind of have to slur the whole thing. You can't even say like Louisville. You have to say Louisville. You have to just full slur the whole thing, like you're drunk on whiskey.
I love it. It's like saying you're in Long Island and people are like, no, you're on Long Island. Like, it's just, you know,
that's right.
You gotta listen to it.
That's right. That's another one. Yeah. You can't fuck that up. You'll get, yeah. Or in Australia, it's how you going?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Not how you doing, how you going. That's another really weird one. Not how's it going? How you going?
How you going? Well, did you know that howdy is short for how do you do?
Oh, actually, no, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That seems so obvious.
Right?
Crazy.
But anyways, yes.
Yes.
We're playing...
the Life and Death Brigade Fest.
Correct. LDB.
Yeah.
Super insane lineup, and I'm so excited. We've been wanting to play LDB for a few years now, so we haven't played a hardcore festival since we played Wild Rose. I think it was like 2019.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, this is going to be, people are going to be very excited to see you. Obviously, you're playing with Knocked Loose, who you know very well, obviously, like featuring on their record.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is going to be like way more your speed than, I don't know, like Blue Ridge or something that I think we met at Blue Ridge for the first time. So this is definitely going to be your people.
Yeah. I'm excited. And, you know, we love doing the Blue Ridge and stuff because it's like, that's a discovery opportunity for us for sure. But, people are definitely who at LDB are going to know who we are. So that's exciting. Definitely kind of like Furnace Fest was, you know, there was a lot of people
there
who knew who we were. And I always definitely have more fun at those shows than having to kind of earn it, you know?
But yeah, but there's obviously going to be a big difference because Furnace Fest is a bunch of old people like me. Like I'm that's my crowd. And obviously I'm down for your band. I don't know if you're going to see me in the pit though, exactly, but I can only imagine LDB is going to be insanity with a lot of these younger hardcore bands and obviously younger hardcore kids coming out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially.
It's going to be nuts.
It was originally sold out and then they opened up more tickets. And so I think it's going to be chaos and we love it. We love that. So
incredible. And then you're going to Europe with Counterparts next month. According to my research, this is your first time overseas. Is that true?
Actually, we did Europe in October.
Oh, shit. Okay. Well, my research was wrong.
No, that's okay. We did it with Lionheart and Terror and a band from your neck of the woods, Get the Shot.
Yeah, kind of my neck of the woods. They're from Quebec, I think.
It's, yeah, you're
Canada,
right.
Canada, same country. Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, it's that was cool. But, you know, first time in Europe, playing a very diverse lineup, I think this is definitely going to be more our crowd. So, and our first time in the UK, actually. So
cool.
Maybe that's, you know, where you thought we did post something about it being our first time in the UK. So
maybe that's what I saw. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really, really excited for those shows. Because, you know, it seems like people have been wanting to see us out there for quite a long time.
No, absolutely. I think Counterparts, that might be more maybe more aligned with you guys a little bit, just kind of more of technical bands, not just kind of straight hardcore. Although I know you love, what was that I read? Killing Time. Or like, you love that band. So that totally makes sense with like, you know, Terror or Lionheart. They're definitely more of that speed. But I think the crowd, the Counterparts kids will definitely be really into you.
Oh yeah, for sure. And we've done a tour with Kubicon in the past as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we love those guys, and that band rocks. So I'm super excited for that. And it's our first bus tour. So
that'll
be an experience. Looking forward to that.
Are you sharing a bus, or you got your own?
We're sharing a bus, so it's going to be a packed house, but, you know, at least we did Europe in a Sprinter last time, which was fine, you know, having a driver, but we're just so used to the van. So it's kind of nice to level up and see what the other half is doing.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a really fun experience. I remember our first tour we ever did overseas, we split a bus, but we split it three ways. It was with Under Oath and this band, The Hurt Process. And it was, they were from the UK, Hurt Process. A lot of people don't remember them. They were on Victory, but they didn't get very popular. It was a triple, triple bill co-headliner. And it was both us and Under Oath. It was our first time overseas. And we had 21 people on an 18 bunk bus. Three people had to sleep like wherever. It was absolute mayhem. It was sponsored by Jägermeister.
Awesome.
we just had cases of Jägermeister. People were just so drunk. It was awful. It was quite the experience. I hope you're going to fare better than this.
Yeah. Well, from what I have been told, the entire tour package is on the bus, but from what I've been
told,
the bus is big. So I don't know. We'll see.
Oh no, you don't know. You don't know how many bunks and how many people, and you don't have that information.
I don't know the numbers to the nitty gritty, but all I know is I will fight for a bunk. So.
You better. Oh yeah. Wow, that's going to be an experience. Well, have fun with that, and I think that's going to be really, really, really good for you. I'd say my only suggestion is start going to bed early now. get ready for it if you can, because the jet lag absolutely destroys me when I go that direction.
Oh my God. So I feel that, because when we came home from that tour with Lionheart and Terror, we were home. Well, not even home. We flew to New York and drove to Elmira, which is upstate, got there at like 4 a.m. and started.
Oh, did you do the I Matter festival?
No, but we played at that venue.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
With Hatebreed the next day. And so after we played,
oh my God,
I was like, I am out. It was that. Just going from doing a Euro tour, coming back, and like the next day after flying home, going into two full USs back to back, I don't think I ever really recovered from that, I'll be honest.
No, I know. Oh, yeah. That's brutal. Well, yeah, now you're gonna figure it out that, hey, maybe we need a day off here and there once in a while. I know it's not what hardcore bands do. Like, I'm sure Terror doesn't take any days off, but they broke their brains years ago.
So true. We were talking about how off days are awesome. Literally like an hour and a half before I got on this phone call.
They are awesome. You need that. Mm-hmm. You need that time. You need that time.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Well, so much exciting things to come. I guess you either probably don't know or can't say when the record is coming out, or can you give us an idea of kind of what fans can expect from the timing?
I have no idea when, but by the end of the year is the plan.
Nice.
So.
All right.
Yeah. We'll have a, you know, it'll kind of be a little like Fragments where we announced it, I want to say like 3 or 4 months before the release date. So, you know, we'll have a proper rollout of singles and videos and all that stuff.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, everyone, including myself, is looking forward to that. And I hope you have, I'm sure you got lots of great tours lined up and people can get ready to see you. Have you done a proper headliner yet?
Not yet.
It's time.
I don't
know anything. I'm not trying to leak anything. I don't know anything. I swear.
I'm really looking forward to when we do that.
Yeah.
Whenever that may be.
I cannot wait. Myself.
Yeah.
Emma, thank you so much for doing this. Is there anything else to you want to add, talk about, or anything I missed before I let you go?
I mean, we kind of talked about it earlier, but our next single, Torn from Your... Oh my God, do I not know the word? I am so stuck on our working title still.
Oh, that's the worst.
Like, even from Fragments, like LP1, I still think of the songs as the working titles.
But, I know.
Yeah, we have a single coming out. It may or may not be out by the time this episode is, but April 5th. So
it's so funny you say that. April 5th, Torn from Your Silhouette. Make sure you check it out.
The name of the song. I knew that.
That's awesome. No, it's really funny you say that about working titles. Somehow we had a working title for our record, Discovering the Waterfront. And it was, the title was Smoke 'Em If You Got 'Em. That was the working title, which is funny because that's an actual Parkway Drive song. But it was just a stupid working title because a lot of times working titles are jokes.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow, and I still don't know how, that working title made it onto the like CD data. So if you put a CD of Discovering the Waterfront into like a stereo or whatever, and it reads what it is, it'll come up track 8, Smoke 'Em If You Got 'Em. So sometimes you can't escape working titles.
That is awesome. I love that.
Well, Emma, thank you so much for everything. All the best in the studio. Knock 'em dead, and we can't wait.
Thank you so much. Have a great one. I appreciate you having me.
Of course.
Alrighty, see ya.
See ya. So there it is with Emma of Dying Wish. Such a cool band, such a cool career already, and so much more to come. It's always really cool to be able to talk to somebody kind of right on the cusp of them blowing up, which I know they're going to do with this sophomore record, which is coming out sometime in 2023. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode. Don't you worry your pretty little head. More is coming. And make sure you also check out The New Noise with me and Mike Howell every week too for all the best new music. I will leave you with a tune. Let's just go with the classic. The first jam on Fragments of a Bitter Memory. It's called Cowards Feed, Cowards Bleed. Dying Wish on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. We'll see you next time.